I was reminded that there was a young boy, he was a city slicker down south in Arkansas. He's going along, he saw this country boy holding his shoat up to an apple tree. And the city slicker said to that country boy, "Why are you holding that pig up to that apple tree?" He said, "Well, so he can eat the apples." And the city slicker said, "Well, isn't that a waste of time?" And the country boy says, "Well, what's time to a pig?" Well, of course, that's the end of the story, but time isn't anything to a pig, but time is something to us. And time is something to God. We read in Galatians 4:4 today. Do we have the PowerPoint, Brother Brad? Do we? I don't see it. Oh, there you go. We read in Galatians 4:4, in the fullness of time, God sent forth his son to be born of a woman. And there's something in that, in the fullness of time. So our message tonight, it's about time. Time doesn't mean anything to a pig, but it means something to us. And it means something to God. God's timing. So I want to read to you not Galatians 4:4, but that is a commentary on Luke 2. I'll be the first to read this to you, just a couple of verses out of Luke chapter 2 for our Christmas season. It came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This census first took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, was governing Syria. So all went to be registered, everyone to his own city. Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them at the inn. So our message tonight is going to be about time. It's about time. Ecclesiastes 3 has some interesting things to say about time. Solomon said that in verse 11 of chapter 3, he has made everything beautiful in his time. That ought to give us some idea that God is control. He is the controller of time. He's above time, but he controls time. And he also set eternity in the hearts of men. So God has time, and he has set the concept of eternity into the hearts of men. And he knows what is going to go on and needs to go on in the big picture, and he knows what's going on in your life in the immediate, in the moment of this time. He knows both the end and what's going on. He's sovereign and control of eternity. So I'm trying to say he knows the big picture, and he knows the small picture. He knows what's going on in your life day by day. Now that brings me back to verse 6, where I said, so it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. Meaning it was time for the baby to be born. Well, we know that took 9 months. And then Galatians 4:4 says, in the fullness of time, God sent forth his son to be born of a virgin. So God, who knows all of eternity, knows what's going on in Mary's life, and it was that moment that the son was brought forth. So I want you to get a hold of that concept. God knows you and sees you in the moment, and God knows and sees you in the eternity future. Because what's going on in our lives in the short term doesn't seem like a good thing. It seems bad sometimes. When things are going on in our life, it doesn't seem good. Now, if you were to ask Mary, it was then that the days were completed for her to be delivered. You'd say, Mary, was that a good time? What do you think? No, it was a very inconvenient time. Here's some reasons. I'll give you some reasons why it was not a good time to marry. Her marriage was not yet consummated. That was a terrible thing in that day and that age. And she was under that accusation all of her life until the resurrection. It was not a good time. This was not a convenient time. Secondly, the birth of her child was taking place in occupied territory. Wow, Palestine was occupied by the Roman army at that time. It was not a good time. Thirdly, this disrupted all of their plans. She was planning on having that baby at home with her support system, her mother and so forth in Nazareth, but this sudden census has disrupted all that. Fourth, it wasn't a good time because it was going to be in a strange place. She didn't have any support system there. She was planning on having her mother and her sisters there, maybe her uncle and aunt and somebody with a video camera and having a coming out party like they do. No. I kind of liked it in the old days where you took your wife to the hospital, they put her in a gown, took her someplace, you went and had a pizza. Come back and see if it's all done. Fifthly, there was inadequate housing. They didn't even have a place for her to have that baby in a decent place. Anyhow, she had to go to the barn. So in the short term, look, if you'd asked Mary and said, was this a good time? I don't think she would agree with that. I thought she would say, it's not very convenient. So here's the thing. When you and I face challenges and changes and trials in our day, it's most often not a good time. I don't need this today. It's not a good time for this to be happening in my life. I've got to tell you about the pirate I heard about. You got that picture so they can see it? Two pirates ran into each other. They were old friends, and so they got to talking. And the one pirate said, Ah, Angus, how you walking on that peg leg? What happened to your leg? Oh, I guess you were referring to me pegged. Well, he says, I met a young swashbuckler, and we got to fighting. And you know how it was. He was faster than I, and now I'm not swashing or buckling too fast anymore. That's how I got my peg leg. Well, he says, his friend says, well, how did you get that hook in your hand? He said, well, I was up on the sails, and I was rigging, and part of it fell into the ocean. I jumped in to get it. Before me got out, a shark got me. And there goes my hand, and that's why the hook. And his friend said, well, I guess I can understand that, but how come you had a patch on your eye? He said, oh, yeah, he says that. Well, he says, I just got me hook. I was up on top of the deck there, and I was doing this thing and look on the lookout, and a seagull came, and bird dropping hit me right in the eye. His friend said, well, why does that take your eye out? He says, that's not such a bad thing. He says, well, it is if it's the first day with your hook. It was not a good time for that bird to do that to this pirate. So the good time, the bad time, those circumstances that come into your life, those challenges, those trials, in the short term, it doesn't seem like it's right. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for a baby now. I don't have time for this sickness now. I don't have time for this disease now. I can't move now. I can't have this bill come to me at this time. All those things, it's just not a good time for me. You see, but when those things happen, all we get is a little piece of the puzzle. And we lack the perspective of the completed puzzle. Now, it's important to you, if you're the piece of the puzzle, you'd like to know what's going on, but you just get moved in a certain place, and you don't see things from God's perspective. And in the short term, it seems bad, but in the long term, it's going to look good. It's going to seem right. In the light of prophecy, this was the right time for her to be delivered of a child. Prophecy. I don't know if you recall, but last summer there was a big bullahoo about, hullabaloo, that is that word, about the hurricane forecasters didn't seem to have it very right. They weren't hitting it quite right. And someone says, well, there are two kinds of forecasters. There's those who know they don't know. And there's those who don't know and they don't know they don't know. And it just seems like the forecast, the weather is just kind of up for grabs. You heard about the weathermen that had to change location. The weather didn't agree with them. But anyway, but Bible prophecy is 100% accurate. This was the right time for her to be delivered with a child. It didn't seem right to her, but according to Bible prophecy, these were the signs. I'm not talking about signs of the ends of the time that we get convoluted about, but I'm talking about the Messiah, time for the Messiah. There was first of all the ethnic prophecy about the Messiah's birth. He was going to be born of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and of the tribe of Judah, the house of David. All that was, I love to read the genealogies. I usually save Luke to read in December. And I'll throw in Matthew chapter 1. I love to read the genealogies and think about how God had been in control down through history to bring this very moment into time. So there was the ethnic part of the prophecy that was right. There was the geographical context for the prophecy. He was born in Bethlehem, a Nazarite, a Nazarene. Also the historical timing. Historical prophecy for the Messiah. I mean, the Old Testament prophecies. Someone said there's 300 prophecies that have to do with the Lord's coming and his ministry. I don't know. I've read them, but I've not counted them. But I want to read to you Daniel chapter 9, verse 25. You don't have to turn to it. No one understand this. From the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, the ruler, comes, there will be seven sevens and 62 sevens. 69 times 7 is 483 years. The prophecy that Gabriel told David back there would come in about 483 years after the decree for the rebuilding of Jerusalem. The decree to rebuild Jerusalem by King Artaxerxes, according to Ezra, if you start from that point, count 483 years, you come to AD 25. When the Lord started his public ministry. What I want to know is, how did that baby know to be born at that time? If that was the only prophecy there was, that would make me sit up and take notice. I'd say, wow, how did that happen? Was that just a happen? It was the fullness of time. God was right on time. For Mary, she's got pushed around like a pawn on a checkboard. And she's having to go, and all these things are upsetting to her, but it didn't seem good. But when you step back and look at it, in the long term, the timing is right. Now, I got to tell you the illustration about four worms and a lesson. Four worms and a lesson. A minister decided that it might help his congregation if he gave some visual demonstration. And so he interrupted his message, and he took four worms and placed them in four separate jars. The first worm was put into a jar full of alcohol. The second was put into a jar full of cigarette smoke. The third was put into a jar of chocolate syrup. And the fourth was put in a jar of good, clean soil. So he got talking about it, and he said, now the first worm in alcohol died. The second worm in the cigarette smoke died. The third worm in the chocolate syrup died. The fourth worm and the good soil survived. And then he says, what is the lesson of this story? A lady in the back stood up and says, if you drink alcohol, smoke, and eat chocolate, you won't have worms. You had to wait. The point is, don't ignore the evidence. The evidence of God's timing was perfect. It was right on. Don't miss the evidence. God used time to authenticate Jesus as his son. Don't miss the evidence. In light of history, the timing is right. In the fullness of time, God sent forth his son. So five quick evidences, conditions of history that made the timing right for the birth of Jesus. First of all, the dispersion of the Jews. Prior to the birth of Jesus, the Jewish people were dispersed throughout the Roman Empire. They helped to spread the concept of monotheism, that there's one God. It was an idol-worshipping group that they went to. They sowed the idea, the concept of one God. They helped to propagate the idea of a holy God. They have to promote and make known the concept of sin and sacrifice and redemption, that all played a part of this being the right time, preparing for the acceptance of the good news that they were going to bring. Then the religious tolerance. The Roman people were very tolerant of other people they captured. You could keep your religion as long as you would pour a pinch out to Caesar and say, Caesar is Lord. Just some one time a year say, Caesar is Lord, you keep on worshiping your idols. Well, that worked pretty good for all the religious groups except the Jews. They wouldn't do that. So the Jews were being slaughtered throughout that rule and reign. And after decades of killing the Jews, the Roman government gave up and they just sort of tolerated the Jews and their monotheism. So for the first 40 years that the church existed, the Roman Empire didn't know the difference between Jews and Christians. And they left the Christians alone long enough to propagate the gospel. And by then it was too late for the Roman government to stamp it out. So the third is the peace dividend. There was more civil war in the Roman Empire under Julius Caesar than in any other time. But lo and behold, Caesar was assassinated, and Caesar Augustus took the throne, and peace broke out for 25 years. And so the Romans, instead of sending out their army to kill and murder, they had them build roads. And transportation became a little easier. And so when it came time for Paul and the apostles and the Jews, Christians that were being scattered to go, they had an easier way of transporting, getting to where they wanted to go, made their business of spreading the gospel, the communication easier. And then the philosophers, the Greek philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, and other Greek philosophers were asking the great questions. What is truth? Greeks loved to argue and debate questions. And so they were talking about that. What is the truth? Just in time for Jesus to come along and say, I am the truth. And so all of these things were into play here. My point is, in the long term, in the big picture, God's timing seems just right. And he knew all along about Mary and the inconvenience, but he was moving through Mary to accomplish his purpose in light of the long time. So, what's the lesson? What's the lesson for us today? It's this. In our lives, God's timing can be trusted. I've met all week with you folks that are hurting. Terrible things going on with these sicknesses, and different things that are going on in your life. And I want to say God's timing can be trusted. You have to keep in perspective the long-term perspective and goal of God. Even when it seems like it's all wrong in the moment, when it's all said and done, you're going to know that it was perfectly right timing according to God's purpose and in light of eternity. I want to tell you the story of a dozen long stem roses. And then I'm going to have a time to give a testimony about thorns. I'm going to read a part of this to you because it's quite a long story. It talks about a lady whose name is Sandra. She felt as low as the heels of her shoes. So she walked into a flower shop just about Thanksgiving time. She was very, very sad. Her life had been sweet. Spring had been wonderful. And then there was an accident, an auto accident came along. The same seat, what are the bags that explode in your car? Same airbag that saved her life, took the life of her baby, her little boy, unborn baby, killed her baby. It's Thanksgiving time when she ought to be celebrating the birth of her boy. She was in great grief, and she went into the florist to buy some decorations for her home. And the florist came out and says, "Oh, may I help you?" And the lady says, "Yes, I'd like to have some Thanksgiving decoration." And the lady says, "Well, I think flowers always tell a story. They speak wonderfully, and they'll be a good addition for your Thanksgiving. Do you want something that is bright and speaks of gratitude?" Sandra said, "No. The worst things happened to me this year. I don't have anything to be thankful for." Just about that time, the doorbell rang, and in came another customer. Her name was Barb. And the salesperson must have known her. She said, "Hi, Barb, did you come to pick up your order?" And she said, "Yes." And so the sales lady left, went in the back room. She brought out a dozen long stem roses, but the roses were clipped off. They were long stem thorns. So they did their transaction, their deal, and the lady walked out with a dozen long stem thorns. Well, Sandra said to the sales clerk, "I don't understand. That lady left with thorns. Who wants long stem thorns?" She says, "Oh, well, you don't understand. She came in last year. Her life was just down the tubes. Her husband and their boy had gone into drugs. The company was going to move them where he couldn't move, and so he was lost his job. Her mother got cancer, and she went on this long list, and she came in to buy flowers, and I sold her long-stemmed roses with the roses clipped off." Sandra said, "Well, why is that?" She said, "Well, the sales clerk shared, I too went through a year like that. My husband died. There weren't enough money to go around. The business was almost bankrupt. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have a family. And I was fixing some flowers, and I accidentally cut off the rose. And it's just like the Lord said to me, all your life you've thanked me for the roses, but you've never thanked me for the thorns." It's like he said, it's when the hard time comes into your life that God draws you to himself in a wonderful lesson that builds into you a ministry for other people. I've thanked him hundreds of times for the roses, but I've never thanked him for the thorns. Remember, it was a thorn that was put to Jesus when he took our sin. Don't despise the thorns. God is still at work in your life in the moment. You have to step back and get an eternal perspective. I wonder if you've ever thanked God for the thorns. You folks should have gone beyond the crisis of that hard time in your life, but you look back and you begin to understand something. We sang this morning, "Give thanks with a grateful heart." That always causes a tear in our hearts. Because why? What is that song so precious to you about? She didn't know I was going to do this.
Which one? Our daughter is, of course, now in heaven. I've done all my crying. Had a little baby. She had to have it premature. It was she had preeclampsia, so the little baby lived 7 months. And as she stood and saw the little baby after he died, which was on our anniversary, the 20th of December. Anyway, she stood there with this little doll in the casket, and she said, "Mom," she said, "this is our song, give thanks to the Lord above. When I am weak," how's that verse go? "For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. Let the weak say I am strong." And then just the ending to this sweet story, she, of course, you know, 2 days before Christmas, she died in 2010. And she hadn't been able to talk, and I was in a grocery store, and I got a phone call, and it was her, and I said, "How did you call me?" She said, "I had the nurse call you." And she was in Kalamazoo, and she said, "Mom, can you come talk to me?" And she hadn't even been talking. So I got there, and she said, "Come on up here." She said, "I love you, Mom." She said, "I'm not afraid to die. And guess where I'm going? I'm going to be with baby Jesse." And that was the baby. And that was a miracle, because she couldn't even talk, but she went on to tell me. And then she said some little strange thing that I finally figured out. It was, "What about the kids, the three kids?" And of course, you know the story on that. We raised her three kids, and they're all joy. One's married to a man in Lafayette, Indiana, and they're living for the Lord. And then the other one is in Washington State. And then our grandson, which we're so proud of and pray for, that's going to be preparing for missions ministry. So, you know, God gave us that blessing of family when he took our little baby and our daughter.
So I can preach that God is the God of all comfort. I can take that and outline it and illustrate it and preach it. People write it down. I don't know how much it affects their life. But I see my wife go to people who've lost their son or their daughter, and she ministers. It built a ministry in her life. She wasn't wanting, but we're glad for it. Have you ever thanked God for the thorns? I think it's an opportunity for you to minister to others when you give a testimony that's not always like 100%. "Oh, the Lord did wonderful last week for me, yada, 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 yada." But when you can say, "I've gone through something, it broke me, but I'm here to tell you, it also built me. It brought me to Christ in a new way, to the Lord, I say, to the Father." So, in the short term, it may be bad timing. God knows you in the moment, but God sees you in the eternity. We're praying about the moment. He's answering us with a longer view. So, thank God for the thorns. Father, thank you for your word. What a blessing it is to know the Lord Jesus. We are so grateful. We rejoice in that. It does not spare us from every hurt that the world offers. Our family goes through things. We go through things. Help us to, at that moment, have our hearts steadfast in the confidence you are our sovereign Heavenly Father. And you're in control of our lives. Help us to have the grace and the patience, and help us to exhibit faith and confidence in you, Father. In Jesus' name, amen.